113.
Rivers
steps up, throwing inside the five, caught, touchdown, Keenan Allen.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.
With the Super Bowl in the rearview mirror by a matter of days, there's more pro football in February. Get ready for it. The XFL starts today.
Nice right hook. That one hurt his eye. Nice right hook. Left hand by Reyes Lance.
Oh, beautiful left hook from Jones.
Outstanding shot by Jones.
One of his better shots of the flight.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
That gummit, let's go, huh? Let's go. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go, Troy. Let's go, you five. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go, Russ.
Yeah, let's go Las Vegas here on a Monday. It is time for the Mac Attack on 920 The Game. I am Ryan McKinnell. That is Rage Against the Machine. And yeah, we'll see if we get through a show today. I don't know. I don't know how this is going to go. Why? Well, because Rage Against the Machine's going on tour with Run the Jewels. A worldwide tour. And yeah, I'm kind of excited, Magnum. I'm just a smidgen pumped up. Oh my God. The most important formative band of my youth is making a return after almost a decade. And we knew about a couple shows. We knew they were going to play El Paso. They were going to play, what was the other one in New Mexico? Las Cruces. They're going to do Phoenix. But now there's a whole bunch more dates and I can't shake the excitement. So how you doing, pal? How was the weekend?
It was pretty good.
Was it as good as finding out Rage Against the Machine is torn with Run the Jewels?
No. And in full disclosure, I don't know Run the Jewels.
You need to.
Okay.
Because you talk a lot about how you're an old school hip hop fan.
Yes.
And yada, yada, yada. Run the Jewels are...
an old school hip...
like... No. I mean, well, Killer Mike is tied to the Dungeon family.
Oh, I know ATL, who that guy is. Yeah.
But... no, it's LP's Company Flow. So you're talking about LP and Killer Mike. They both go back to the 90s, the late 90s.
Yeah, I remember Killer Mike. Yeah.
But they are the best group of the 2010s. They got together and they made three albums that are... they actually have a song with Zach De La Roca of Rage Against the Machine.
Wow.
But they're incredible. They're incredible. My favorite, I've saw them at Brooklyn Bowl a couple times. Like, actually, the show that I saw them at Brooklyn Bowl a few years ago was the most packed I've ever seen Brooklyn Bowl.
Really?
People were in the restaurant. Not out of choice, but because it was the only place they could be and hear it. I mean, I was all the way at the back. I didn't see them the entirety of the show. I just saw hands. Anyway, yes, very, very exciting finding out that. And then speaking of excitement, we were heading into the weekend, and we had Wes Reynolds on from VSiN on Friday, and we were talking to Wes. He was doing an XFL betcast. Obviously, the Extreme Football League, the XFL.
I haven't had a chance to cut it up, so I won't play it. By the way, did you like the name of the title the other day?
Yes.
This is the XFL.
It was very on brand. It was very on brand.
I mean, so, Vince is, he's got just a like, you're fired.
That's
like,
a pretty good one.
Yeah, he does. He's got that.
Well, it's his brand. It's his brand. That's what Vinny Mac does. I asked you after the Wes Reynolds interview, are you going to watch the XFL? And you deadpan, no. I will not be watching.
I may have to change my mind.
Yeah. I think we're all, and listen, I laughed, but I kind of laughed, not at you, I kind of laughed with you. Like, yeah, no, I'm not going to watch the XFL.
Yeah. And you're a guy with wrestling.
Sure. Yeah. But come on, like, football's over. I'm going to be paying attention to college basketball as we get ready for March Madness. I'm obviously going to tune more into the association as the NBA gets going and we make a push towards the playoffs. And then... yeah, there's plenty of hockey, obviously. Vegas Golden Knights, you know, back, and we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Not the best outcome on Saturday night, Magnum. You were there. I was watching the UFC fights. So we're going to talk about those also because a little bit of controversy going down with Jon Jones. I know. Shocking, right? Controversy, Jon Jones. I'll give my thoughts on that fight coming up in a little bit, in about 20 minutes. But back to the XFL, my expectations were not high. They were not... really anything. They were just, oh, the XFL is coming back. Oh, Vince McMahon is investing millions of dollars again in an organization that is, I don't think, right, that secondary football can work.
Well, it seems like he has a much better game plan this time. Like, he failed once, but credit to the guy, he never gave up on the dream.
No, he didn't.
And, you know, the thing is, he's got the right people behind him, right? Fox and ESPN.
That the broadcast partners, Oliver Luck.
Yeah,
I mean, the commissioner behind the XFL, yeah. And then the coaches and the legitimacy, the likes of.
And how about this? Pepper Johnson, who was the defensive coordinator of the, what are they, the LA, whatever they are?
Well, let's not go with the names yet, all right?
They fired the guy after 1 week.
That's pretty crazy.
The defensive coordinator got canned after one game.
Hey, man, expectations.
Former New York Jet and Giant Pepper Johnson.
Expectations, right? Now, Jim Zorn, obviously, with the Seattle team. Bob Stoops over there.
Hey, there's some credibility.
There's some credibility. There's some legitimacy. And you hit the nail on the head, right? For those of you that didn't see, we're going to go through this because something is happening with the XFL. Because it isn't often that you go on Twitter for an event, whether it be the Oscars, whether it be the XFL, whatever the case may be, especially in the case of a secondary football league coming along a week after Pat Mahomes leads his team back in one of the greatest Super Bowls of all time, yeah. Right? You're not expecting to go in there to hear a lot of positivity. I expected a lot of snark. I expected a lot of, you know, jabs at Vince McMahon and the XFL in general. I was preparing to dole out some myself. The issue was when you looked around after Saturday and those first two games had been completed, do you know how hard it is to have something like that and to look on social media and see virtually no negativity and all positivity?
Well,
really think about that.
Yeah, yeah.
The XFL debuted, everything. Yeah. It doesn't matter. It could be a recipe for chicken parmesan.
Yes.
If it goes viral enough, you're going to have negativity attached to it.
Yeah.
Inexplicably, the XFL did so well this weekend. And guys, people thought I was crazy, right? People, like, during the first game, people were like, all right, McKinnell, relax. Like, you're clearly, like, you're a pro wrestling guy. You're feeding into this, like, yeah, I'll be the judge. Some people would talk to me, came in later in the night, hey, Big Mac, I DVR'd it, and I tuned in after the show, or I tuned in after I got home from work or whatever the case may be, and oh my God, you were right. Everybody, virtually everybody that I saw that watched the XFL's debut was, I'm not going to say blown away or anything like that, but it was much better than anticipated. Now, why was it much better than anticipated? Magnum hit the nail on the head when he talked about righting the wrongs from 2000, right? This was not the other XFL. This wasn't extreme. This wasn't hokey. This wasn't, you know, pro wrestling. They weren't cutting promos. This was football.
Guys were not dating cheerleaders. Right. There was no roll the ball out and have two idiots chase it. And one guy separating his shoulder to try to...
I forgot about that.
Remember that? The guy got hurt.
Yeah. But there were elements of... And this is what made this weekend so successful for the XFL. They did away with virtually all of the mistakes they made in the first run. And it's like they went to a Reddit forum for like the last 5 years of NFL complaints and then took all the things that people hated and changed it. And they were like, all right. And I'm not talking about like the anthem and the kneeling. Thank God. Actually, that was because remember when the XFL was debuting or when they made an announcement, they were like, everyone's going to stand for the anthem and this is America's game and we're sick of the way the NFL. They went away from that, which I actually think is smart because I think you would have alienated some people. Just like the NFL alienated some people with allowing the protest to happen and whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think you alienated the opposite end of that.
Exactly.
The people who really don't care.
So they didn't really make it political. It was more about the NFL. Sucks and we don't. And I'm talking about the presentation, the speed of the game, right? The penalties, right?
Yeah.
And then
that was the big thing that I saw, by the way. People saying how smooth the games are running because there's not holding on every penalty or on every play.
My wife immediately picked up on it. I said nothing. I really spent the first game tweeting.
Yeah.
And when I'm like, I view that as work. Like when I'm tweeting, it has to do with the show. It has to do with the Mac Attack. It has to do with my other shows. So I try to, you know, construct tweets in a somewhat, you know, solid manner. Like I try to make sure my grammar is on point. And like again, it's an important part of your job. So I'm sitting there. I'm not really talking to her. And she's kind of giving me ideas about what to tweet. But then she's also kind of playing a soundtrack in the background. And I'm like hearing what she's saying. And I'm agreeing with her, and she's dissecting it as a very casual sports fan. But she's like, this sounds great. And I'm like, yeah, it does. Why is that? Well, Steve Levy's on the broadcast. the professionalism of the delivery of the product, there was very little discrepancies from the NFL and the XFL. It wasn't hokey. It was just really professionally well done.
And that's the problem, right? The very first time he went around, he tried to make it pro wrestling, right? You had Governor Jesse Ventura in the booth. Remember, he was doing color commentary?
Yeah.
You had The Rock involved.
Right. None of that happened this time.
And it shouldn't.
The only thing that I saw was a callback to pro wrestling was in that first game they hit the Undertaker's gong during one of the segments.
Which is fine.
But that was it. And if you weren't a pro wrestling fan, there was no way you would have known.
Yeah, I mean, you hear that at the hockey games, right? You go to Golden Knights games, right? Wags, ring the bell, bong. You know, that's all it is.
So they had all these things that were... And people forget, the first XFL, for the failure that it was, historically speaking, and that we laugh at it, and, you know, we kind of chuckle, and we'll go back to Friday. Are you going to watch? No, I'm not going to watch. It's the XFL. Right?
Now, to be fair, it's not because it was the XFL and it had already failed once. I never watched the AAFL or whatever that one was that Jared used to get all excited about. I never watched the United Football League where there were four teams.
Did you see that from that note from Darren Rovell from ESPN?
No.
The XFL has already surpassed the AAF's revenue for ticket sales and merchandise within the first weekend.
It's kind of shocking. No, it's not to me because I think people knew off the bat that they were trying to be legitimate. You had legitimate people behind it.
Yeah, but we didn't know it was going to – we were laughing on Friday. Is it going to be pro wrestling?
Well, yeah, but still, I mean, when you have to – have a sense that there's a little bit of credibility when ESPN and Fox get involved.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And it certainly played that way.
Now, when Fox starts putting Joe Buck on games, that's when it becomes 100% legitimate.
No. Well, are you trolling me?
No. Not because I like the guy. I mean, because quite honestly, I think he's terrible.
Joe Buck couldn't call an XFL game.
No, but...
Don't bring the excitement level I have for the XFL and this high that I'm on, XFL coupled with Run the Jewels and Rage Against the Machine going on a world tour. Don't you dare invoke Joe Buck's name and scare me like that,
if
man.
If there's anything that could
it's Joe
bring
Buck.
Max Joy, yes. Max Joy, yeah, that's right, Max Joy to a screeching halt, it's Joe Buck.
It sounded like you were naming me like like Max Joy,
Max,
like M-A-X,
yeah,
Max Joy, like Joy. I was a superhero or something. Yeah.
Max Power, watch that episode of The Simpsons.
I would say
the other
Max
night.
Max Joy might be a different type of entertainment. Now that I think about it. We're gonna get off the rails real quick if we don't get back on track. There's all this, the unexpected nature of the XFL, the way it hit, the way that I'm dissecting it and watching it, and certain things are clicking, no more so than the presentation itself, Magnum, which is one of the things that the legacy of the first XFL, for those of you who don't remember, it did have a legacy and a very positive one from this standpoint. There were a few things that the XFL did the first time around that the NFL stole. Yeah, that Skycam you like, that cable cam that goes over the center of the field. That's the XFL.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other things. There were other things. But there was innovation in that first season of the XFL. Well, this reboot had a whole lot of innovation. First off, the best part of the XFL, every single time something happens, the players are interviewed right after it happens. Can you imagine? Now, I know he's not signed with the league right now. But can you imagine if Johnny Manziel threw a pick, but it was the product of his wide receiver. He blows a route. He's supposed to go post. Instead, he goes curl route or whatever the case may be. Can you imagine sticking a microphone in Johnny Manziel's face 20 seconds after that receiver blew that route and the type of quality audio that you're going to get? That is what the XFL did this weekend. They took you inside of the game. Yes, they limited penalties. Yes, they kept the game going. Now, the actual game time was actually kind of similar to other NFL games. But 10-minute halftime. Oh, and in the halftime, they take you inside the halftime. You hear from the coaches. You actually hear the halftime speeches. And I go back to the player interviews. After a big sack, after an interception, after a touchdown, they go right to the sideline while that player is still out of breath, like LeBron James during a halftime interview, except it's not. The game is still going on, and they interview the players.
I like it.
How do you not?
I mean, honestly, because you're going to get the raw reaction of... Right. And it's not scripted.
Exactly.
And you know what? A lot of times like these and you know what happens. A lot of times when these guys talk to the media, they already know what because they're told, they're prepared. There's no preparation. You come off the field, hey quarterback, you suck. You threw an interception.
What do you think about that?
Well, it was a terrible throw.
It wasn't my fault. It was that bum ass receiver who blew his route. Now we've got like legit pro wrestling drama, but all from, and this is Vince McMahon's genius, right? Storylines. What do people care about? How can I maximize the storylines? How can I create interest? And more importantly, how can I create that interest to sticking? How can I keep it conducive to lasting viewership? The answer to that is stop giving a lull in the action when there is a break. Because as we've talked about with the NFL, I think it's like 20 minutes of actual game time if you break it down.
Not even.
I don't even think it's that.
Yeah.
I think it's 13 minutes. Yeah, something like that.
Out of 60.
Think about that. Right? So Vince McMahon being he's a lunatic, right? But he is also a visionary. Pay-per-view doesn't exist without Vince McMahon. I don't think many people know that.
Yeah, because he was the guy who started with WrestleMania.
Yes. And no one else was doing it.
WrestleMania 1 was maybe it was
closed circuit. It was closed circuit. Yeah.
And I know WrestleMania 2 was closed circuit.
Yep.
But WrestleMania 3, I think, was the first one. Remember, Pontiac Silverdome, they had the largest crowd in the history.
Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan.
The biggest thing in the history of pro wrestling.
And that was pay-per-view was largely built off the back of Vince McMahon proving that people will pay a premium price for an event on cable television. Boxing would follow. Concerts would follow. Other events would follow. But really, the confidence of Vince McMahon for him putting on that event, he was very much responsible for the success and the birth of pay-per-view as we know it today. And let's go back 10 years ago. Not even. It's probably a little less. About 8 years ago, 7 years ago, when the WWE was charging $49.99 for a pay-per-view. I think that's what the number was. I think it was about that. $50, let's just say. They were still doing following the regular pay-per-view model.
Yeah.
He announced that they would be starting their own streaming service called the WWE Network. It's been around about 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, and it's a big hit.
Well, why is it a big hit? Because overnight they said, yeah, the $50 you're paying for pay-per-view, you don't have to do it anymore. We are going to offer you every pay-per-view for $10 a month on our new streaming service. Oh, also, when you pay that $10 a month for that streaming service, you're going to get access to our entire back catalog. Every pay-per-view we've ever ran in the past, house shows, Monday Night Raws. He gave all of his content away for $10, the Netflix model, the streaming model. Vince McMahon, 7 years ago, 8 years ago, had the foresight and the understanding that the business and the landscape of streaming was changing the pay-per-view model, and he got ahead of it before anybody else, and he took a huge risk, and it's paying off now. But this is a guy who, yes, he has failed miserably at times. He has looked like a carny freak show many times.
Yeah.
Right? But that also, as I just ran down the lineage and the history of Vince McMahon, there is all that carny stuff.
Well, let's not forget. There
is the visionary stuff where he has changed fundamentally the way we consume entertainment. That is Vince McMahon. So don't think for a second, if you're sitting here, you're like, why is he talking so long about the XFL? Because there is real legs here. I don't know. I have no idea if the XFL is going to work this second time around.
No, there's a
good chance it doesn't, right? Because the NFL is a behemoth. But I will say this. I am proof positive, 100% sure, 100% sure, that the NFL will be stealing ideas from the XFL
this time around.
And you know what? It's not even stealing. You know who needs to do something about this? Baseball. Baseball should be looking at what the XFL did this weekend, and they should look at the player interviews after plays happen. Pitcher throws high heat at someone, right? Blows him off the mound. There's venom going back.
Dugout.
Right. Yes, exactly. Get him when he's coming off the mound. I want to hear what he's saying. Yeah. I want to know what happened. Also, so there's an example. Also, what happened with the XFL during reviews for the plays, you went into the booth.
And you're actually seeing it.
You're hearing what they're discussing with the video review board.
And that's what I want to hear, right? Like,
exactly.
Remember when they first brought that to the NFL? They used to actually talk to you. They would discuss, this is what. Now, it's just another commercial break for the network.
Exactly.
It's stupid.
Exactly. And that is where Vince McMahon, yes, did he see that there was a way to navigate and to steal fans and to get in on the kneeling and the way that people felt about the NFL? Yes. But this is the stuff that is going to have a more lasting effect. Real, tangible concerns about the product of the NFL. Vince came in at really what felt like, I didn't think any of this was going to happen. I didn't think I would be sitting here saying this today. There was no way I thought the XFL was going to hit like this. No way. Not in a million years. But I'm also not going to deny what I saw. And that was a functional, cohesive product. Also, the product on the field was pretty damn good. Like, the actual look of the game. It was fast. It was competitive. Some of those games were back and forth. It was enjoyable. There was a lot to like about the XFL, and I do want to get back to it. But as I was talking about, I have some more things I want to talk about the XFL. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. After the UFC, and we're going to touch on the Vegas Golden Knights. But I brought up baseball. Baseball needs to follow this model on some level, right? You need to get in, and you need to help the game. Clearly, things are going wrong. People are upset. They're not watching like you would hope they would. We've talked about the aging demographic of baseball fans. You have got to get people into your game, right? And one of those reasons, and we're going to see after this year, is what does baseball even mean anymore, and what does a championship mean? Obviously, we're coming off that Astros cheating scandal, the banging on the trash cans, potentially.
And maybe Red Sox, who still haven't been punished, by the way.
No, they haven't. They got rid of Alex Cora, and that seemed to...
Oh, they also got rid of David Price and Mookie Betts.
Yeah, and that's official, by the way. But no, this is a story that I'm going to get to right now that I said was the worst part of the Astros cheating scandal. Toronto Blue Jays reliever Mike Bolsinger, you don't know him. There's a reason you don't know
him. You're going to know him now.
Because he was pitching last year, or 2 years ago, and he played one inning on August 4th, 2017.
That's his career?
That's his career. 29 pitches is his career. On August 4th, 2017, playing a game in Houston, he gave up 29 pitches. Why? That's because the Astros lit him up for 4 runs, 4 hits, and 3 walks in a third of an inning.
Wait, he threw 29 pitches in a third of an inning?
Yep.
Wow.
Over the next few seasons, after debuting in 2014, over the next 4 seasons, he bounced back between AAA and other minor league teams, playing for 3 different teams. But his one shot, and this is what we talked about, his one shot in the league came on that day, August 4th, 2017. He is now suing the Houston Astros. First of all, he's seeking unspecified damages, so we don't know the exact amount. But it's not all for himself, because he wants the Astros to forfeit roughly $31 million in bonuses that they got from their World Series title, and they want the money to go to charities in L.A. focused on bettering kids' lives, and as well as to create a fund for retired baseball players. Now, I like that the fact that it's happening in L.A. He filed the suit in Los Angeles Superior Court on Monday.
Probably a good idea.
Accusing the Astros of unfair business
practices. Right, because they're already feeling like they got screwed in Los Angeles.
Exactly. Now, I don't know if Bolsinger's an L.A. guy. I don't know. But there is obviously that tie, right? Suing them for unfair business practices, negligence, and intentional interference, with contractual and economic relations. This Mike Bolsinger story is probably about on the second or third day that I found out about the cheating scandal. That's where my brain went. Oh, my God. I mean, yes, I feel terrible for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts and Clayton Kershaw and the other people that forever had their legacies impacted by the things that happened in those World Series. Back-to-back years for the Astros, unfortunately. Dodgers. You know what I meant. Back-to-back years, unfortunately, people had to face them. But this is where my brain went. What about the guy, that unlucky SOB, who got called up in the most important moment of his life, his one time to shine, and it came against that cheating-ass Astros squad. And they light him up, and then he never gets a shot again. Because I've made the case that the difference between average and a career minor leaguer and good, a career major leaguer, is razor thin.
Yeah.
It's about the opportunities you get and what you show in those opportunities.
Who
if you
you're
get called up,
for,
if you get
exactly, against.
If you get called up and you have a couple good outings, the equity that can build,
you
I'm talking
around.
Like exactly. Yeah. Well, we've shown him that he can do it.
Especially if you're a middle reliever.
Right, exactly. He's just not finding his groove right now. He did it against them at this point. Let's just give him another chance. And then he gets that other chance, and then a couple weeks down the road, he gets back on track and everything's okay, right? And then he's 8 years in the league and he makes millions of dollars and everything's great and he has a family and he's a Major League Baseball player. Hey, was he a Hall of Famer? No, but he made a great living and he was around the game and he got to live his life.
Yeah,
because he wasn't playing the Astros. Now, There are some people that don't think this is a big deal. Mark Seidel, former producer on the show, diehard Houston Astros fan, now back in North Carolina.
Well, you said it right there.
Yeah, diehard Astros fan. You better get right with that, Houston, that your team is now the biggest villain in baseball history.
Costing guys their livelihoods.
This is bigger than the Black Sox.
Yeah.
The Black Sox was done because that team in 1919 was run by Charlie Comiskey. And that dude was a enormous bag of trash. He didn't play his players. He screwed people over. He reneged on deals. He was a terrible owner. Now, I'm not justifying at all, okay, what those White Sox did in 1919. That's not what I'm saying. But there is that element of, I go back to Chris Rock's skit back in the 90s about OJ. I don't condone it, but I understand, right? Okay. I don't even agree with what Chris said. It was a comedy bit, right? But I go back to the 1919 Black Sox. I don't condone it, but I understand. They felt wronged, and the only power that they had, and they were the best team in baseball, Eddie Seacott, Joe Jackson. I mean, that team was, you go look at the numbers, what they were able to do, and Seacott specifically, 28 win seasons. And granted, the game was different. Doesn't matter. As dominating a force at that time, they would have smoked that Cincinnati Reds team. They would have absolutely kicked their teeth in. There's no question. They already knew they were winners, but they wanted to stick it to Comiskey. So again, you understood it. The Astros are playing in a billion-dollar league, in a billion-dollar era where TV money is pouring in. You're all paid. The league minimum, you're all paid. You have no reason to do this other than you're weak, you're cowardly, and you cheated as an organization. So Astros fans, I'll say it again, get right, because everyone hates you. You went from the bell of the ball. I loved Altuve. I love George Springer. Alex Bregman is a G. This team had all of the makings of a fan favorite where you could transcend outside of your region. Every so often, a team like that happens. Yeah, Oakland A's were a great example of that. Yeah. Now, they were all cheating in 88 and 89.
Yeah.
But Canseco, McGuire.
They transcended baseball.
Ricky Hendon, they transcended baseball. I was growing up in Indiana. And I knew that team, and they were badass.
I knew the whole starting lineup
exactly.
in Jersey.
And the same thing was happening with those Astros until now.
Yeah.
Until now.
And the thing is, I think they were a favorite because they were non-traditional,
yes.
right? Like they were
They did it the right
they
way.
They had zero history.
Yes.
They
built their farm team up.
They lost 110
right.
games.
They took old man Verlander and made him into reshaped him to form.
Yeah.
And now it is a joke, and it is a black mark not only on their organization, which is going to take years to get on the other side of. They hurt baseball in a way that I don't know how they recover. Because this Bolsinger story is a great example. For those who don't miss the story, we're talking about it. Mike Bolsinger, former Toronto Blue Jays pitcher, middle reliever, suing the Houston Astros because the one time that Bolsinger got to play in Major League Baseball, it was against the Astros in 2007, and they lit him up. And forever alter the trajectory of his career. And that is disgusting. You robbed that man. You might as well as went into his house, put a gun in his face, duct tape his family, and taken everything that they earned for. Now, I'm not saying maybe the trauma isn't the same, and I understand that's an extreme example, but that is an absolute home invasion. That is larceny. That is a felony. That guy might have $20 million right now, and his kids might be in a better position. His family might be in a better position. I don't know his story, but I completely understand why Mike Bolsinger is taking this personally and why he's suing the Houston Astros. Good for you, Bolsinger. I hope you get all the bags, and I hope you get that money for charity, and I hope the Houston Astros, I don't care about the Houston Astros. I hope they suffer for years. This is an inexcusable part of baseball history that I don't know how we get on the other side of. Well, speaking of controversy, this weekend at UFC 247, John Jones retained his light heavyweight title, but was not without a fair share of controversy. We're going to get into it next here on the Mac Attack.
Pong Joon-ho!
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Thank you. Jom 전에 그 국제 영화상 수상하고 이제 아 오늘 할 일은 끝났구나 하고 이제 릴렉스하고 있었는데
Yeah, Parasite last night, taking home the top honor at the Academy Awards, 92nd annual first foreign language film to win Best Picture. Full disclosure, I haven't seen it. I did see 1917. I did see Jojo Rabbit. I did see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I did see Uncut Gems. I did see a lot of the movies that were up for Best Picture, although Uncut Gems wasn't because it got robbed. But I didn't see Parasite. However, everyone that I've spoken to that I respect said, bar none, best movie of the year. So I'm going to get to it very soon, along with Ford versus Ferrari. It was a really cool moment last night. I also should mention, as we do a little fact-checking there, I kind of dropped the ball on that Mike Bolsinger story. He did play a little bit sporadically in the majors throughout a four-year period. So that was not his one and only appearance in Major League Baseball. So that changes the story a little bit. Right? Because that was my whole thing. What about that one guy who got called up that one time and the career trajectory was changed forever? All right. It wasn't exactly
it
that.
It sounded good, though.
Well, it did. But the, but also, I mean, yeah, you know what we've learned in 2020 and 2019 and 2018 and 2017 and 2016?
Yes.
Yeah. Lies sound good. And people will believe them. It doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. So we caught it, thankfully. We caught it. We caught it. That wasn't as bad as me on the UFC post show on satellite after Saturday. Final segment. I went nuclear on a fake Twitter account that I thought was Judge Joe Solis out of Texas, but it was really a troll account. Now, I did pick up on it before the show had ended, but prior to that, boy, oh boy, I lost my mind. I'm much calmer now. So why was I yelling after UFC 247? Well, that's because there was a bit of controversy after John Jones's title fight. In the main event against Dominic Reyes, previously undefeated. If you listen to the show last week, I said that I thought Reyes was a little bit too undervalued at plus 350, plus 375. I thought he had a much better chance. I thought he should be sitting around plus 250. And if you watch the fight, there was a reason why I felt that way. Dominic Reyes is a very, 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 very good fighter, and John Jones is declining. What is that due to? It could just be, you know, 12 years of fighting the best of the best and being a long reigning champ and it being 32 years old. And that's a long stretch, right? Not sure exactly what it was, but on Saturday night, once again, John Jones showed a slowing down. Still won. He still won, but there was a slowing down. Now, why the controversy? Well, it's because it was a close fight. And making matters worse, that Judge Joe Solis, the guy down in Texas, well, he hadn't judged a championship MMA fight since 2017. And his record throughout the night was bad, to put it lightly. There were judging indiscrepancies throughout the night that were inexplicable. I'm going to save you the time. There were just two fights in particular that were scored in a fashion that anyone with a semblance of understanding of the way mixed martial arts should be scored and the way a fight goes, it's just, it's you can't argue. You can't argue. The rounds were wrong, and the wrong people were, in a couple instances, were awarded a fight that they did not win. Now, the main event with John Jones and Dominic Reyes, that was not the case, okay? I do want to be clear about that. John Jones could have won the fight. Did I score him winning the fight? Absolutely not. I gave rounds one to three through Dominic Reyes and rounds four and five to John Jones. But rounds two and three, three more specifically, I thought two was pretty much in favor of Dominic Reyes. Not everybody felt that way, but that's fine. We're somewhat close. Now, the stats, not that close. In terms of significant strikes, Dominic Reyes was ahead in rounds one, two, and three. He landed the more effective strikes, the ones that landed more, the ones that had the crowd ooing and eyeing. He felt like it felt like he was winning the fight. If you watch the fight and you know any bit of fighting, it's probably Dominic Reyes' rounds one through three. But then you get into the pontificating and the rules and how fights should be scored in mixed martial arts. And one of those conversations around how fights should be scored in mixed martial arts centered around the word or words, octagon control. Now, octagon control, what does that mean? Well, it's kind of a problem because no one really knows. It's kind of a subjective term that you can use to define anything.
Well, it's a lot like in the NFL when they say a football move. Well, what the hell's a football move?
Exactly.
The guy turns around. Is that a football move?
Yeah. What defines this? What yes. defines octagon control? Common sense, logic, and reasoning would suggest that it means pressure, that you are controlling the octagon and the fight is going where you want it to go. And I think in the case of octagon control, it does. I go back to the word pressure. I think it's more of that. I think people see a fighter walking forward, and they think, oh, he must be winning the fight. Well, that wasn't the case. John Jones, yes, he was walking forward for more of the rounds than he was backing up. but he did run away at different points and tuck and run. And I mean, it just
see now it's hard for me to grasp the concept of the fight going where you want it to go while you're getting your eye busted open
and backing up.
Yeah, like to me, they don't seem to go hand in hand. You can't be in control of the fight if you're eating punches and kicks.
Yeah. Well, one thing is for sure, it was a close fight. John Jones winning again in a close fight. This has happened a couple times in his career, actually. In the last fight he had against Brazilian Thiago Santos, he won a split decision. A split decision because one other judge had that fight scored for Thiago Santos. Now, the special thing about that fight, Thiago Santos had one leg. He blew out his ligaments at the beginning of that fight, and he fought John Jones on one leg, and he almost beat him. Now, the next fight, Dominic Reyes, to a lot of people had that fight, including UFC president Dana White, had scored that fight for Dominic Reyes. Many people had Dominic Reyes winning that fight. So, as we talk about the man who fought the next pay-per-view after Conor McGregor in John Jones, and that was done strategically. You just had McGregor. You want to capitalize on the popularity that pay-per-view brought in. So what do? You roll out your next biggest star for the next one. And that next biggest star is John Jones. The question will be for how much longer. How much longer can this man stay undefeated? And that, I don't know if I have an answer for, because it really depends on what he does next.
Is he really the second biggest star at this point, though?
Yeah. I think he is.
I mean, could you make the case that Amanda Nunes is a bigger star than John Jones?
Nope.
No.
Nope.
No case at all.
Nope.
All right.
There's nothing to back that up. I think that she's, you know, she's supremely dominant, greatest female fighter to ever live, and definitely an attraction. But there's just, I think you have to be.
I mean, Jones has done it over a very long length of time.
People aren't going to want to hear this, but Amanda Nunes doesn't have that look. And that, when you are a female fighter with the UFC, it is always going to be problematic. I would say Paige VanZant is probably more popular than Amanda Nunes.
Because she's an attractive woman.
And she's has a crossover appeal. And she has appeared on Dancing with the Stars. Now, she is nowhere near the fighter that Amanda Nunes is. Will probably never be a champion.
Oh, well, we saw it with Gina Carano, right?
Yeah. Well, but Gina was undefeated and earned that spot. But yes,
yeah.
Her placement was definitely, I would say, a bit more favorable because she is drop-dead gorgeous. She is now in Hollywood.
Yeah, she was in The Mandalorian.
She was in The Mandalorian. Yeah. She was in Deadpool. She was in Fast and the Furious. Gina Carano
is. Yeah, so what you're saying is Nunes doesn't quite have that crossover appeal where John Jones actually does.
Well, from the standpoint that yes, the GOAT, he hasn't lost.
Yeah,
there's the blemish on his record that says one loss to Matt Hamill, but that was a technicality. That was not a loss. That was a horrible judging and decision by Steve Mazzagatti, who was no longer a referee, largely in part because of that decision and other poor decisions that he's made as a referee. That was a casualty of circumstance. John Jones has never been beaten. Now, there are people out there, well, yeah, he has. I saw him lose on Saturday.
Well, the record says otherwise.
Yes, but that's the key, right, is what happens next. I personally think that Dominic Reyes deserves a rematch, and I honestly think that John Jones needs to have it happen for his legacy. He probably doesn't feel that way, and honestly, when all of this is done, he probably doesn't. Like, if he were to go have five more fights and not lose, the fact that he never rematched Dominic Reyes, it's like when Mayweather fought Canelo when Canelo was like 22.
Yeah,
it's like, yeah, he got to him before Canelo was Canelo, and he strategically did that, but he was also so dominant against all these other fighters and Jose Luis Castillo and Diego Corrales, right? You chalk it up to, is it unfortunate, right, that we didn't get that when Canelo was 26, 27? Yeah, but you also understand that he was so dominant throughout that time that it's not something you can really stick on. I think that's similar to John Jones, but I think a lot of us in the MMA world want to see that fight again. And if that doesn't happen, John Jones needs to jump up to heavyweight, which is something we've been talking about for a very long time, and test himself at another weight class, because his time at 205 at light heavyweight, it feels like it's coming to an end.
Does he make that jump?
I think he does. It's either Reyes or that. Maybe he sticks around and has a rematch with Santos. I don't know, but I got to be honest. I don't think I really have the interest there. I want to see him tested in a real way, and I've grown accustomed to fighters moving up in weight. Like, Anderson Silva did it at different points. Now, he didn't do it for a title,
yeah. But
he did it to keep things interesting.
I used to love watching that guy.
I mean, how could you not?
In his prime.
St. Pierre, after he took 4 or 5 years off, came back and beat Michael Bisping for the middleweight title. Now,
yeah.
Was it because he saw that Michael Bisping was old and had no business being a middleweight champion? Probably. Like Michael Bisping's ascension to the middleweight title, I don't want to take anything away from it.
It was kind of strange,
but
though.
It was very strange.
And I like Bisping a lot.
As do I. Yeah. But George St. Pierre saw that situation and was like, you know what, I can take advantage of that. But again, John Jones's legacy is mostly secure. It's really about what he chooses to do next. Speaking of choosing to do next, coming up here in just a moment, I do have to mention we got a giveaway for you guys, and it's not opium this week. This is very exciting. Happening on February 22nd is the date. That's a Saturday at 1 p.m., the Xfinity Series. You know when NASCAR comes in town? Well, they're going to be here. And we got tickets to the Xfinity Series on that Saturday. I'm going to tell you how to win just coming up. A couple minutes. So stick around. I'll tell you how you can win tickets to the Xfinity Series out there for NASCAR. But I would say, speaking of controversy, Bobby Knight made his return to Assembly Hall. Bloomington, Indiana, after 20 years away now. I don't know if this is a national story, but I grew up in Indiana. I know Bobby Knight pretty well. Not him personally, but you don't grow up in Indiana in the 90s and the 80s and not know Bobby Knight. He is an institution. He is the state. Basketball is the sport, and he is the god. And he came back to Assembly Hall. We watched him. Some of us watched him, if you saw the highlights. He was crying. He was emotional, and the crowd welcomed him with open arms. I understand it. I understand it. Full disclosure, I don't like Bobby Knight. I never liked Bobby Knight. I graduated from IU, but I have no love for that man. I know too many personal stories about people who have interactions with him, people that went to his basketball camps in the early 90s. I'm not going to elaborate much more because it's a lot of conjecture. But if you ever find me off the air and you want to hear a story or two about Bobby Knight and the way that, again, I don't want to put it out into the ethos because, truth be told, I don't know how much truth there is to it. But I do trust the people who told me these stories. And he is what a lot of people think he is, which is not a good guy.
Well, and that's the thing, though, right? Like, and I'm not gonna crap all over Indiana because I think it's the case in a lot of places, especially in college sports.
The idol worship?
Yes. Yeah. Like Penn State, perfect example.
Yes.
You are willing to turn a blind eye to horrible, horrible things.
Yeah. Now, we should be clear, IU was not Penn State.
No, it was
a track record of abhorrent behavior.
Of abuse.
Of abuse, yes.
Remember, he choked the player. Yeah. You know, the laundry list goes on.
Yeah, he was a problem.
He was no hero.
And we almost saw it again over the weekend when Dick Vitale, former broadcast partner of Bob Knight, went up to him and tried to, like, embrace him or rub his hair or give him, like Knight was crying. It was an emotional moment. People that knew Bobby Knight and I guess would call him a friend felt, I would imagine, good for him. So Dickie V went up to try to embrace him, and that senile old SOB ripped his hand away from his head, threw his arm in a downward manner, and now they tried to say afterwards, oh, it was just joking and it was just a foment.
I had to watch it a few times because when I saw it the first time, my initial reaction was, this is not staged. No, like, this is not a joke.
Well, I watch enough pro wrestling to know when something was staged. That was a psychopath in Bobby Knight, right? Reacting poorly to a situation where he's insane. And he was insane 30 years ago, and he's still insane. Don't you put your hands on me and yada, yada, yada. Bitch, I will put my hands on you however I want. I'm embracing you because you're my friend. You crazy old man.
Yeah, not a good guy. Not a good guy at all.
Not a good guy. And again, I'm not going to say if IU wants to let him back and they want to cheer for him, fine. I understand he won you a ton of national titles. He was a hugely important part of college basketball and a hugely important part of IU basketball. And when he left, now remember, Tom Coverdale and that team did end up going to the national championship
Mike Davis was a coach.
The year after he got released or he got fired from IU, that team full of Bobby Knight players made it to the national title against Maryland. And they really haven't been back, albeit the Victor Oladipo year was pretty good. Like, they've had smatterings of success since he left, but nothing.
Compared to any, you know, and that's the case in a lot of places. It's not just Indiana.
No, it's not just Indiana. It does. Probably happened at Duke when Coach K is gone. All right, now is your chance. Good. The Xfinity Series is coming to Vegas. NASCAR is coming to Vegas the weekend of February 22nd. We got a chance for you to win a couple tickets to go out and see that Xfinity Series on that Saturday. All you got to do, it's year 2020, NASCAR's coming back. All you got to do is be caller number 20 right now to the Mac Attack, and you get two tickets to the Xfinity Series February 22nd. Oh, Mike, wow. All right, Magnum just let me know. Not two tickets. It's actually four tickets. Be caller number 20 to 920 The Game right now here on the Mag Attack, and you got some Xfinity Series tickets over there for the NASCAR event on February 22nd. Number is 365-9200, 365-9200. When we come back, Vegas Golden Knights talk, Mag Attack.
The righty starts to hit. His seventh game back from hiatus. Meanders in at the hash marks. He shoots and scores. Justin Williams wins it. Carolina gets the victory for James Reimer. Final score, Hurricane 6, Golden Knights 5.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
All right, you heard it there. Vegas Golden Knights in action on Saturday, blowing a massive lead to the Carolina Hurricanes and Eric Halla. Justin Williams with the game winner over there. Nick Gizmondi, former Vegas Golden Knight broadcaster, his good buddy, Justin Williams. Thanks, Gizmo. Congrats to Jack. Jack was our winner of those tickets over there, the Xfinity Series. There you go, Jack. Yes, that's right, Jack. We keep all your information. As Magnum said, we're like the IRS. I will get to tomorrow how I chose my new XFL team. I will pontificate and elaborate on that. I have a favorite.
Team too.
We
I,
do? Yeah. Well, we'll hold it. That's what we call in the business.
A tease.
A tease. That is right, Chris Chapman. So no tease here. What the hell happened on Saturday?
Well, you know what? They are saying that they just were dealing with some fatigue.
Okay.
Third period. You know, you play a couple games on the East Coast. You come back. You're only back for one night. And then you're skating hard. You know, you're practicing hard. You got a new coach. And
yeah.
I'm not sure I buy it. Because the fatigue wasn't there in the first two periods.
Looking like William Karlsson, when he comes back, might be on the third line. You okay with that?
No.
No?
No.
He hadn't been playing very good.
Well, in all honesty, neither of the guys on the third line, outside of William Carrier.
You know, maybe that's why they put him down there.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, if anyone's going to jumpstart Eakin and Tuck, maybe he's the guy.
Yeah. So tomorrow, Vegas Golden Knights back in action on the road. Where are they at?
Minnesota.
That's right. They're playing the Wild. Where am I going to be? Well, I'm going to be back out of Tivoli Village. I'm going to be over there at Parkway Tavern watching the game from 4 to 6, giving you guys some good prizes, giving you chances to win some signed memorabilia, and, of course, that Volvo road trip package. That'll be tomorrow at Tivoli Village and Parkway Tavern. More Vegas Golden Knights talk tomorrow. And, again, Magnum and I are going to tell you how we chose our new XFL team. We'll see you tomorrow, friends.